We welcome to the studio this morning a big good morning to Matt Cunningham from Sky News. How are you, Matt?
G'day, Katie. Good, thanks.
We've got Gary Higgins, the Leader of the Opposition. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Katie, and we're all glad it's Friday.
Oh, aren't we all? I'm always glad when Friday rolls round. And we've also got Kate Warden, of course, the member for Sanderson. How are you?
I'm great, thanks, Katie.
Lovely to have you in the studio. And we're awaiting Terry Mills, so I'm not too sure where he is, but that's all right. If he doesn't turn up, hey, we'll be fine.
There's and I can no drink shortage. His coffee.
You can drink his coffee.
Yeah. It'll be great, David.
There's no shortage of topics to talk about, that is for sure. It's always a busy week. But we might start off with the news from late Friday afternoon that the Liquor Commission decided that there would continue to be a Dan ban, or Dan Murphy's wouldn't be able to open here in the Northern Territory. The reason given was the location and its close proximity to some of those communities in the area. I found it really interesting that the government, or I should say the Chief Minister, then sent out a statement on Friday saying that he was disappointed with that decision. Now, the reason I found it interesting was because many would argue that the government hadn't made it overly easy for Dan Murphy's to open here in the Territory, firstly with that 400 square metre, floor limit. I think you call it, yes.
Unscientific floor limit.
Floor being the operating word.
And then, of course, there was an allegation that his former chief of staff had called it a Bunnings for drunks. And then they did obviously have to wait for that liquor commission to be set up before they could try to transfer that licence from the Stuart Park BWS, I think it was, maybe. So, look, it was an interesting one, but there's no doubt that a lot in the community still want this to go forward. Reactions?
Oh, Katie, I might kick off,
yeah.
If that's all right. I don't know if there's any order here this morning, but I think that the Chief Minister, we know that there's a process in place now for Dan Murphy's to come to the Territory. I think that when Territorians can step back and have a look at it, that process is independent and it's going through, and that's appropriate for anybody coming forward to the Northern Territory. Now they know exactly how they stand if they want to do business. And I think you take the alcohol out of it. This is a business, so they need to go through the process to get that business up and running. I have to agree about the location. As a personal point of view, the location is extremely close to some vulnerable communities, and Bagot Road is notorious for people getting hit along there often when they're intoxicated. So I think we have to have a look at that, but the Liquor Commission has to make those decisions. But obviously, you know, they've got some, they know the parameters now and they can work with that. And I would like to see, it's always healthy to have good competition. We know that the big stores that sell alcohol in the Territory do that wisely. They can't do, you know, they're not going to, they train their staff well, they employ people. There's all those things. So from a business context, I think the Chief Minister's comments are absolutely, bang on.
The feedback that I certainly had for the Chief Minister earlier in the week, and what I asked him, is if you've got all of these other measures that have been implemented as part of that Riley review, why does a location matter? If things like your floor space and things like your BDR and the actual floor price are working, why does a location matter?
Yeah, look, my comment is that I think the Chief Minister's comments are politically motivated. The thing is that, sure, they know the rules now, but they've been going for 3 years. They've spent a lot of money doing this, and the government has changed the rules 3 or 4 times in that process, starting with the 400 square metre debacle. They then changed legislation or changed the regulations in, you know, around midnight one night, and then they had to withdraw that. Then they brought in legislation. They did a review with Riley. Hang on, I'll let you speak. The thing is, they did the review with Riley and all this, and now we've got the Liquor Commission, and they say, yep, look, we'll welcome any business here. They now know what the playing field was. Well, 3 years ago, when they submitted this application, they knew what the playing rules were. Government changed them, and that's where government needs to be held to account. We all recognise there's a problem with alcohol, and that if you have a Liquor Commission, and there was a body that reviewed all applications before, but what's happened in the 3 years is private sector has been told, nah, we will change the rules when and how we like. And then for the Chief Minister and, you know, the government to now say everyone knows the rules now, what a load of rubbish. They change them and continue to change them, and what will stop them changing them into the future?
The thing that was pointed out to me earlier this morning, a bit of irony, was the fact that as part of the Boundless Possible campaign, saying that rap is on these different newspapers all throughout Queensland with the big headline, "We're open for business," in the same week that business wasn't allowed to open in the Northern Territory.
Yep, that's right.
Well, it's radio silence, I think you call that.
Well, I'm probably going to upset a few of your listeners, Katie, but I think I agree with Kate at some level that the location of the proposed Dan Murphy's was problematic. I was actually surprised when I first heard when the proposal first came out and said, "Oh, you know, Dan Murphy's is going to be out near the airport." I thought it was going to be actually over near the airport. And then when I discovered, you know, I was late to the party on this, I admit, when I discovered where it was actually going to be, I was like, "Geez, that's a bit of a worry." It's virtually across the road from the Bagot community, so I think that there is a decent argument as to why it shouldn't go there. And I've seen that argument helped. There's a ED doctor, Andy Buck, who posted some really interesting stuff on Twitter this week.
Yeah.
And he posted a picture of the X-ray of someone who was run over crossing Bagot Road, someone he had to try to resuscitate. And if you have a look at that X-ray, I think it might change a few people's minds. But as to the politics of it, that's why I found the Chief Minister's response to this confusing as well.
Yeah.
Why didn't he come out and say what Kate just said then, that this location was clearly problematic? Instead, he came out and said that the decision was a kick in the guts for Territorians, a decision made by the independent liquor commission that his government had established. Well, then come out and say, "We established an independent liquor commission to make independent decisions on this thing, and I back the independent liquor commission." Well, and if they want to have another go somewhere else, then have a go.
I did say, Matt, that it was a personal decision.
Yeah, I know. Of course, it was a personal decision.
It's my personal view that it was always problematic, and I have spoken about that for quite some time.
But on the liquor commission itself, though, I mean, surely as a member of the government, you set up an independent liquor commission so that the independent liquor commission could make independent decisions.
That doesn't mean you can't be disappointed in that decision. You know, the two are not synonymous. But the other thing I really do want to say is that everybody knows, and there's a lot of rhetoric around it, but nobody seems to be saying it publicly, is that BWS own Dan Murphy's and Territorians want choice. Why can BWS not provide that choice now? Yes, open to Dan Murphy's, that's fantastic. But BWS, this is a business decision for them not to stock, you know, the better wines that people are saying. People are saying this is what we have. If BWS supply those things through their current stores, then problem solved, go through the process and Dan Murphy's opens. That's great.
Well, I think businesses mixed up. That it's Endeavour Drinks. They're two separate companies. They may be related, but they're two separate companies. Endeavour Drinks have a whole stack of contracts with a lot of the boutique wineries, say, in South Australia, and actually do the online sales. They've got nothing to do with BWS.
Look,
and none of those wines come through BWS, and it's an exclusive access for Endeavour Drinks. It's my understanding, and I've been down there and actually had a tour of Dan Murphy's or Endeavour Drinks and how they do their online marketing. And it's very interesting to go and actually have a look and see what training and that they do for their staff and everything down there. And I did that a couple of years ago, so I had a full understanding of what was going on.
Look, we're going to move along because, gee, there is a lot to cover off on this week. And one of the other stories that that continued to bubble along late last week and then again on Monday when I caught up with the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, is this decision to grant $12 million grant to the Darwin Turf Club for this grandstand. Now, hopefully you can all hear this. Take a listen to what the Chief Minister said earlier in the week when I asked him whether he'd make the same decision again. So you'd do it again.
Yeah, well, the grounds for the decision were there. Like, I've always said, you can't live with regret. You always got to do the best you can each day and you learn from your lessons. And look, let's put this one in the learned lessons column.
So he said he'd put it in the learned lessons column. There's no doubt that the government's lost a lot of skin on this decision, not only for the fact that it was announced the week when we had some serious issues when it comes to beds at Royal Darwin Hospital and there not being enough beds, and then to come out and announce a $12 million grandstand. But I think the things that have followed on from that have been the real concern. Matt, you've been following this story as well, and it's become the gift that keeps on giving for a journalist, you'd have to say.
Well, I still have a lot of questions about the process and they're questions really that the government should be asking. Now, I put some very straightforward, I tried to put some straightforward questions to the Chief Minister's press conference yesterday, and yep. at the moment, every time you bring up this issue, the press conference seems to get wound up pretty quickly. So then I put the questions through his office yesterday, and the questions I want to know, right, that we know from that probity auditor's report that was put out that there were five people on the selection panel, right? We know that two of the people on the selection panel were members of the Darwin Turf Club board, okay? I want to know how the members of the Turf Club board voted, whether they voted for JTEX, because that probity orders report came out and said this is how the votes went down. Three in favour, one against, one tied, right? If you take out, if you presume that the two members of the Turf Club board voted for JTEX, well, then you're left with a decision of 1-1-1, right? And I don't know how that decision can be seen as independent if two of the people on that selection panel were members of the Turf Club board, of which Brett Dixon, the director of JTEX, is the chairman. That doesn't seem independent to me, and I find it remarkable that when you put those questions to the government, they can't give you an answer. If I was the Chief Minister, that is the first thing I would want to know. I would be ringing the Darwin Turf Club and saying, tell me who was on that panel, how did they vote? Because if those Turf Club board members voted for JTEX, then in my opinion, that is not an independent process.
But Matt, wouldn't you be the one that then, couldn't you not make that call yourself to the Darwin Turf Club?
I'll be meeting with them this morning, Kate.
I think it's a really valid question to ask the Turf Club.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But why hasn't the government asked the question already?
Well, possibly they have, but it probably is not
Michael
our question
Gunner
to
said
answer.
Yesterday that he hadn't.
Well, but it wouldn't be our question to answer. It would be the
But it'd be your question to ask. It'd be your question to want to know the answer to.
I put that question to the Turf Club when I had Damien Moriarty on the show right after that decision was made. He said he couldn't answer it due to confidentiality. Oh, we're talking about taxpayers' money.
$12 million is taxpayers' money. So the government should tell us. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, this was my whole argument right from the word go as well. If you're handing over a $12 million grant with no strings attached, no questions to be answered, and no safeguards in place, why is that happening with taxpayers' money right from the word go? Now, I noted when I was away that the Chief Minister then came out and said, OK, well, nothing wrong happened here, but we're still going to change the process. Why wasn't that process in place already? We're talking about taxpayers' money here.
Well, Katie, to be fair, the process where the grant was given, I think every government gives out capital grants, and there was a three-year proposal from what I'm informed around the ask on that. I've been down of the Turf Club during where those events are held, and I think there is a big need for a bigger venue there that's air conditioned to bring people up from down south. I'll finish, Matt, because the Chief Minister Cup this year, Kivilay had 200 people, 80% of those were from interstate. And whilst we think our weather's great at this time of the year, for those southerners, they were sweating it out on a big tour. And Kivi said to me, we could have a lot more people here, but the space isn't big enough. So I think there's an absolute demand there for that to happen.
But is it the responsibility of the Northern Territory government, i.e. the Northern Territory taxpayer, to foot that bill?
So government funds lots and lots of grants all the time. We do it for multiculturals. We do it for an awful lot of organisations. So let me finish, Matt, because I can see you want to butt in. But it's really, really important. But it's really important that we understand that this happens under every government, that capital grants are given. These projects stimulate jobs. Now, when that money was given out, from everything that I'm hearing, that money, there was some checks and balances around, this is the money and this is the project. What the Turf Club then goes and does with that money, that's their business. Obviously, you know, we need to tighten up and say, okay, when you get the money, this is the process. But should you have to do that? That's the big question. For me, that's the question. Should I say, you know, to the multicultural communities, when we give you the money, we don't want to see a conflict of interest with the way that you spend that money. If they come in with quotes and they say, okay, we can build this project, that's the important stuff. Government shouldn't have to do that, but obviously we've recognised that we do now.
Can I just make one quick point in relation to your point about people, you know, needing somewhere to be accommodated on a big race day. Are you aware of this planning report that says the proposed grandstand will provide improved and additional function space and facilities for race day attendees and is unlikely to significantly increase race day attendance? Because one of the big arguments that's been made around this is that we need this facility to attract more people to come here. And yet that report would tend to say that that they have no that this grandstand is not intended to attract more people to come
QB
here
Lay
at all.
QB Lay will say something very different to you. The capacity he had was for 200 people. He said he could have a lot more, and 80% of them were his suppliers from interstate that he brings up for that race day.
Kate, would you were you pleased that the cabinet made this decision?
Look, Katie, I'm not. I don't have the privilege of cabinet. I have no idea about the details, and that's just how it is for every government. Yep. As a backbencher, you don't hear those things. You get a briefing on the decisions that have been made in cabinet. Look, I think at this particular time, Territorians won't argue that we need to stimulate the economy, and the way to do that, all the advice tells you, is through creating jobs. It's really important work, and we all need to, you know, keep that in mind. Whenever we're looking at these things, keep in mind that we need to keep people in jobs when it's tough. That's the job of government.
So and how many jobs is this particular project going to create?
You know what? Can I take that on notice? Because I don't have the details of that today.
I think the question there is when you
create jobs.
Any money you're putting out for infrastructure creates jobs. So it's not
correct.
This specific job that this specific grant that creates jobs. It's just one of many. And if I can just bring it back to a budgetary point of view, I found it quite interesting that the Chief Minister, when asked where did you get the money from, and he said it's out of our infrastructure funds. So, you know, this is, it's not, you know, extra money, it's not going to make any difference. Well, it does. It's $12 million that you're not going to spend somewhere else. So it's a matter of, the feedback I get is that a lot of people, and I, for one, support the racing industry, that's fine, but the question's got to be asked, where are the priorities? That's one question I sort of ask. The other one then, of course, is that we have given a lot of these infrastructure grants out in the past and over many, many years, and this issue has never ever raised its head before. So why is this different?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so many questions, I think, that remain unanswered.
I think one reason that it's different is you just go and have a look at the political donations before the last election. That's why I think it doesn't pass the pub test. People are saying, you know, look, just line the ducks up in a row, right?
They had been asking for this project for over 3 years in the planning. It wasn't something that just sprung up that was new. And I think that when these decisions, I think, you know, Gary's taking the safe line here, and as you would if you were in opposition, because at some time you in the future can be in government and you have to live with the decisions that maybe come down now. Every government along the way has provided capital grants to organisations to construct. In this case, the media shone a spotlight on what happened after that.
And now, before, though, and before. Don't you think what happened before is important as well?
Because that's exactly
like, line
right.
the ducks up. His companies give $100,000 to the ALP.
Well, you could say how much work have they got from government?
But he only donated to one side, as far as I'm aware. And then suddenly, $12 million comes from nowhere. You know, it's not something that hadn't been mentioned before, hadn't been mentioned in the budget that was handed down a couple of months earlier. Suddenly $12 million is handed over to the Darwin Turf Club, and then lo and behold, you know, who's got the contract to build the grandstand? Kate, you can't tell me that people out there on the street think that's okay. You go and walk out there, it's the number one issue that people are talking about in town.
It's not the number one issue, Matt.
It's one of the ones that for us as journos, we continue to get phone calls about. When I was in New Zealand, people were contacting me about this. It's something that they're really worried about. Now, the argument's been from the government as well. Well, it's different buckets of money when you talk about things like hospital funding. Yeah, do you know what? They're still the same. I've got money in one pocket, still I've got money in the other, pocket. Still the same pair of jeans.
Katie, but that is a very valid, and Gary will have to agree here, because as I said, in the future he may be in a government with money, and you just, you know, things like the hospitals are funded particularly around by federal funding. You can't then take hospital money if you underspend and go and use it on infrastructure. The same goes the other way. You've got to, you know, we're we ask all our people to acquit their money. The Northern Territory is no different. We need to acquit our money back to the feds. When we've got infrastructure money, we have to spend it on infrastructure. Gary knows that, and I understand. You know, you can't then muddy it up. I've seen very large grants go out to communities.
I'll give you a very clear example. go to the people of Dundee that haven't got a health clinic and want their roads sealed and ask them where their priority would be.
Gary.
Now, that is money that is NT government money that does the roads out there and does the clinic out there.
So have they started paying rates out at Dundee yet, Gary?
So you're saying you're not going to seal the roads because they don't pay rates?
You know what? We all pay rates and we get roads around our suburbs.
So now we know why the people of Dundee, I'm glad they'll know about that. You pay rates, you get roads. Roads, rates and rubbish. Remember that. Well, the government's not going to give you roads because you don't pay rates.
That's not my decision.
We're going to take a very short break. You are, of course, listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was. So much to cover off on in here today. There always is. But let's talk pre-selection, because we know that the CLP announced the first of their candidates for next year's election. Now, we also know Terry Mills was out earlier in the week. He was talking more about policies for Territory Alliance. The Greens announced one of their candidates for Nightcliff. And the ALP, well, on the front page of the paper today, Hero Cop, a tilt at Parliament. And I met Tiny, is his nickname, a little bit earlier in the week, Mark Turner. Good bloke. Few good names, actually, being thrown up when it comes to pre-selection.
He's a great bloke.
Look, I think the fact that we've got good people, I mean, you know, the CLP had some great people nominate from a variety of backgrounds. I mean, this fellow we're talking about for the Labor Party, I don't know much about him. But I think anyone that is willing to put their hand up into politics is good. And the better the people, the better politics will be.
Absolutely.
here in the Territory. And provided we end up with a variety of people, that's well and good.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree. I mean, in terms of the paper today, obviously,
has that news come out from someone?
Look, or Katie, the pre-selection process is afoot. It's absolutely a decision for the Labor Party, and we have our processes. It's no different for me. I'm having to go through pre-selection, as are all sitting members right now. So it's an important process. You cast the net widely, and you see who puts their hands up. But, hey, if you get to sit on here and, you know, have a go at each other on a Friday, who wouldn't see this as an attractive...
Do you know, I get asked by so many people if they can come on this show.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
You'd actually be surprised by who asks if
privileged
they can come on
Katie
this show.
I was to bring students with us one week. You know, we have a week that was student-centered.
Then nobody will stand in the future.
Spare me. It's like when Q&A does that thing where they get the school. I mean, seriously.
We might ask the ICAC commissioner to come in one week.
There you go. Wouldn't that be good? We could ask him some questions.
But Katie, all serious. I mean, the front page of the paper is a great thing. Tiny is an amazing bloke. He's phenomenal. I know you've met him as well. And I think that if that's what we've got to look forward to, that's a great thing. And I think Gary would totally agree with me that the pre-selection processes need to be robust. We need to pick good people.
Everyone needs to.
And we need to pick people that represent Territorians right across the board.
And I think the thing that comes into it is you pick all these people based on their experience up to this point.
Correct.
It's between now and the election that the voters get to make their decision as to whether these people will make good politicians.
Well, that's always the worry, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
Some of them might just hide and not get out there, and then boom, they're in there and not so good.
What happened with your pre-selection, Gary?
Mine's all approved, Matt. That's it.
It's not done by the Litchfield branch on its own anymore, though?
Look, the branches make recommendations to Central Council. Central Council approve those recommendations, and that's what happened to mine.
Mm-hmm.
It was approved by Central Council, full stop.
Yeah, but you're not part of Litchfield. Your pre-selection's not done just through Litchfield branch anymore, is it?
You moved out
of Litchfield branch onto the Central Register, is that right?
Can I actually give you a bit of background information here, Matt?
Sure.
And that is that your source is getting everything completely wrong. I've been on Central Register since immediately after the last election, because we only had two members.
Yeah.
Right, I, in actual fact, as the leader, get a casting vote right at Central Council.
Well, on your own
vote.
Pre-selection?
No, at Central Council. Right. Now, the thing is, at that point, the decision was made to move me to the Central Register so that there was not seen as a conflict. So I, in actual fact, have been on that Central Register for over 3 years.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah, but everything's rosy. Everyone on the Litchfield branch reckons you're
great bloke. Great.
Yeah, look, they were in the meeting at Central Council, and as far as I know, no one disagreed with my pre-selection. Right?
I'm looking forward to another.
What about Kenny Vowles, Kate? Is he going to get pre-selected?
Well, you know what? Kenny's not here at the moment, so pre-selections for that seat haven't been opened, and I think that's the courtesy the party's given to him, and that's a matter for Labor.
You reckon he should be, though?
Well, he's my local member, Matt.
Well,
you know, I live one street out of Sanderson, and I've got nothing to say. It's a matter for the Labor Party.
You don't think he's a good local member?
It's for the Labor Party to decide.
No, but as a constituent, do you think he's been a good local member?
I'm in Sanderson 99% of the time of my life, and I take absolutely very little notice of what's going on in Kenny's seat. So I am not going to say another word. Matt, it's up to the Labor Party to make those decisions. And
if you could just really win it, we really need a camera in here because everyone's just staring at Kate.
The rules are though, at the next election, I can actually, at the last election, I couldn't even vote for myself. It was a really sad because I'm literally one street out of Sanderson.
Who'd you vote for?
I voted for Kenny. That's fine. I don't mind disclosing
vote for him again?
This is the whole beautiful thing. I don't need to. I vote in Sanderson this time around. If you're a sitting member, I don't need to vote anymore in Johnson. So the people of Johnson need a good choice, and they need some good choices going forward. I look forward to some great candidates in the seat of Johnson and seeing it well contested in those matters in terms of our pre-selection for the Labor Party.
Are you worried that you could lose that seat if you end up with a messy pre-selection battle or Ken running as an independent or,
you know what?
If you don't resolve,
Matt,
that issue that's been bubbling on
that
for a long time.
The people that vote are the ones that get it right, and we'll let them make that decision in just under a year's time. It's really important that people have a voice in Parliament, and they make that choice, and they can look at the record that they've got for their local member. And you know what? That's what people will look at with me. What's my record? What have I done over my term? Have I been true to what they've asked? Have I stood up for them in Parliament? Have I done those things? And you'll be judged on that. And you do it every 4 years, and those 4 years just fly past. I can't believe we're 3 years in and we're doing this. So
it's interesting that there's a tradition, sort of a tendency here for members, if they work hard in their electorate, sort of the longer they're in, the better the chance of holding on. And in particular, you know, there's a lot of times if a local member works hard, they get the real sophomore surge the next year, which would seem that, Kate, would you agree, it wouldn't make a lot of sense then to get rid of a guy who's been in there, in that electorate for Labor, in Johnston, Ken Vowles I'm talking about, for two full terms now, to then go and sort of kick him out, someone who everyone already knows, and put a newbie in there, wouldn't be the best way to try and hold on to that seat, would it?
Matt, I think we need to put forward the best candidate for that seat. And if that's Ken and the party decides that, that's a decision for the party.
Do you think that Ken's the best candidate for that seat?
That's not my decision.
But your personal view, like you gave us your personal view before on Dan Murphy's.
I can pick and choose where I have my own personal view, Matt. Now you're trying to dictate where I have personal views. These are a matter for the Labor Party. And,
don't look at me, I'm not going to help you.
I've been helping you out all morning. I'll help you, Kate.
Apparently there are some real issues with the seat of Catherine at the CLP's pre-selection on the weekend. Gary, is that right? Because I am told...
My unreliable and always incorrect sources
tell me that someone was actually pre-selected for that seat, Catherine, but then it wasn't sort of approved. Sorry, I don't know
null and void.
But now they've gone back and they're going to do it again because there was some argument at the Central Council meeting about how that pre-selection was done. Is that right, Gary?
No, look, it's not the arguments in Catherine, from my understanding, and I'm not in the room, Matt, so I only rely on the same sort of sources that you have, but my understanding is there's...
Yours are more reliable than mine.
There was nothing wrong with the recommendation that was put forward. There was a technical problem with the process, and that has caused the delay, but I think the president came out after Central Council and said it would be announced probably in the next couple of weeks. So if we're saying it's going to be redone, I think that tells me that it's not.
So I think that's a yes.
Yeah, I think that's a yes. I'm told that there was...
I made it very clear there was not an issue with the recommendation or the acceptance of that recommendation. The issue was with a technical issue over the process under the Constitution, that's all.
Right, so do you think that the person who was recommended will end up getting pre-selected in that seat?
Look, I would presume if you went through the whole process again, you would come out with the same result. But that's, again, I mean, you know, that's really something you'd have to ask the president. I'm just giving you what I know, correcting what you were saying, right? And that's it. So
we better take a very short break. Matt, you reckon from now on we just ask them yes, no questions?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. That's a very good idea.
360 with Katie Wolf. Email 360@mix1049.com.au. Phone 8941 1049.
Well, we have opened a can of worms by the look of the text messages that I've received this morning on the week that was, and they're about rates.
There you go.
So let's read a couple out. Lynn from Litchfield agrees with Gary. She pays rates and she lives on Sandy Road and it's a dirt road. I almost jumped through the radio when I heard that we don't pay rates. Claire said, I live in Southport, pay rates and our roads are not covered. And sceptical for a few. Sean said his mate lives in Darwin River. He paid rates and then got told the council was going to bitumen the road if he wants the bitumen at the front of his house, but it was going to cost him several thousand dollars. Another one here, where's Terry? Maybe he's worried about the new ALP candidate and the letter to the editor in the NT News today. Why don't you get Tiny on the program? Another one.
Just say the fifth floor's listening.
One here, morning Katie and crew, Dennis from the Do. Don't rates go to the council, i.e. local government, not the territory government? If so, that argument's irrelevant. Does not matter if you pay rates or not. Back in the 90s, they put caveats on each block if you couldn't afford the cost of power or bitumen coming past your place. That one from Gazza in Palmerston. And Roz has said, Kate, we don't pay rates because we don't have a council. We paid for our own medical facility, which you closed down. We paid for our power line. What a black... So there you go. So
I've got an easy solution to this whole problem.
What's it?
We need to abolish one level of government. I mean, this is what happens constantly here in the Northern Territory. You have, you know, it happens in Darwin, it happens out in Litchfield, it happens everywhere, and the council points a finger at the government and the government points a finger at the council and they say, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. That's your issue. Like, seriously, how is it that Darwin and, like, in the ACT, right, there's one government and it is the government and it is the local council? Why do we need to have... the Northern Territory government and, you know, the council at the same time. Well, and I'm not necessarily saying that it's the councils that should be abolished. I'm just saying that one level of government. We've got one level of government too many.
One thing that people were quite peeved about earlier in the week was the council and the trips to China. Now, we ended up putting a few questions to the Lord Mayor, Konrad Skalas, about this, and we've been told that there's been two trips to China this calendar year, one with one staff and one EM, one with two staff, one EM. Lord Mayor has not attended those trips. We'd asked sort of how many trips there'd been, how much it had cost. It doesn't look as though I've got any info there about the cost, but I'll go more deeply into this throughout the morning and read that response out for our listeners to the council's trips to China. But thoughts? I mean, do we need that tier of government or that tier going to the likes of China to try and bring business to the Northern Territory? Isn't that the government's job?
Paul Conn needs to realise he's no longer a minister. He's the mayor, and it is a role of the territory government. Now, it should be the territory government that initiates that, and by all means invite local government to come with them. But the thing is, we've got to look and say, well, how does this confuse the people overseas? And it does. I mean, the thing is that you need to just have one real central contact there, otherwise you're getting the wrong messages out. And by all means, you know, I'm not saying that local government shouldn't be involved in some of that. They've got city deals, you know, joint, you know, partners, city, what do they call them, sister city deals. And you know, they should be sort of promoted, but it's territory government that should be promoting it, and Conn needs to realise that. And if he thinks it's a good idea, go to government and say, look, do you think this is a good idea, and let them initiate it.
So I guess, Katie, I can comment really easily in this space, because obviously I was on council for four years before I got elected, and these are really important questions to ask. And I'm really glad the rate stuff has come back up because I wanted to qualify. You know, Gary asked before about a health clinic, and then he talked about the roads. They're two very separate things. Of course, health clinics are in the purview of the Northern Territory government. We should be having those discussions. I'm sure they're being had. But in terms of roads, you know, even around our suburbs, if you look at the roads outside of our homes, those are provided by council, and that's what rates are for. And it's been a long-held discussion out at Dundee. A lot of people out there quite rightly want their roads sealed, and that's a local government, the Minister for Local Government, I'm sure he's considering that, and I think all governments have considered that over the years around what they do in that space, because there has been pushback from Dundee. People living in Dundee, they don't want a council. So if that's changed, then all well and good. But, you know, that's those local roads, and I'm talking local roads, because I know that the road to Dundee was sealed by a previous, I think, a Labor government anyway, that it's really important that those roads conversations are had in the context of a local government. So that, I just want to make sure that that's clear. In terms of travel and overseas travel, when I was on council, Katrina copped a lot of flack around going to Anchorage, which was a sister city and still is to the Northern Territory. And I know that she ended up paying her own way to go in the face of public backlash. I think council, there was an interesting council meeting the other night, I believe, from what I've heard reported, where a lot of aldermen are not happy. These are decisions, you know, you've got, if you like, the aldermen sitting around, there's 13 of them, including the mayor. They need to make those decisions and be accountable to ratepayers. As a ratepayer myself, I would question about why, what's the value in local government going to China? And I'd like to see what those reports say. So it's important we go online. I think they publish all their reports. I would hope that that's not a report that goes into confidential, which can be a habit of councils, a bit of risk averse around talking to people about what they're doing. I want to see some tangible outcomes from it.
Not suggesting that councils deliberately try to hide controversial information when they move those things into confidence.
I'm
shocked.
There's a process around what goes in the public arena and what doesn't, and those anything that's moved into confidential is actually reviewed, I think, every 12 months or every 6 months. Is that any
wait
longer
commercial?
Wait until
the storm blows over and then let the
decisions might be commercial in confidence, and you have to be really careful. But in terms of this one, I'd like to see some transparency of decision making. It's really important that people know where their ratepayers' money's going.
Yeah. Can I actually just make a comment, Katie? We talk about rates and roads. Mm-hmm. The biggest source of income into the territory is GST. The people of Dundee pay GST. So to actually patronise them and say if they became a council they would get roads is absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. They pay GST the same as everyone else. They pay their taxes. The source of income for the roads in the Territory comes from three sources, federal government and the Territory government, and it comes either direct funding or it comes through grants. So what Kate is saying is absolute rubbish, and it's disrespectful to the people of Dundee who do pay GST, who pay extra money for fuel, who have problems with communications, and to just say to them, you're going to have to pay rates if you want roads, is an absolute disgrace from this government.
I reckon we need to do a road trip to Dundee. I was there earlier in the year. We should do the week that was from Dundee. It was so much fun.
It's a great place in the Territory, and but it is a new place, and those things need to be bedded down.
Not sure Kate will be safe out there.
I'm actually heading out there in the next few weeks, actually, Matt. I'm always happy to meet people, Gary.
We better take a very short break.
Interactive radio with Katie Wolfe.
Well,
phone 8941 1049.
It's 7 minutes away from midday. I tell you what, you guys must have missed me while I was away because, you know, there's so much chatter going on between
me. Gary's had too much coffee this morning. Take his away.
I've been away for months too. Don't forget, Katie. It's like...
that's right.
Just for the benefit of your listeners, though, we were talking in the break about comparing...
Oh, Matt.
No, but seriously, we were talking about comparing the previous CLP to the current administration, right?
Yeah, no comparison.
No, but this is why I think that the Turf Club deal is such a problem for you, because if we're going to an election next year, right, and the government's had its issues, but I reckon until this point, the one thing that Michael Gunner and the government would have been able to do would be go to the election and say, oh, you know, we might have had our issues, we might have had some problems here and there, but we're not like that mob.
Yep.
We're not, you know...
That's the thing. Do you know, I want to say on the record that the number of people that I've actually had say to me, the biggest thing that concerned them about that deal with the $12 million grandstand and the events that followed is that they felt actually really disheartened and really, you know, really disenfranchised by what had gone on, because they just didn't think that that type of thing would happen. You know, you can think of it whatever you like, but anyway, I think it certainly upset people.
I think the thing is nobody expected that the chair of the Turf Club would award himself a contract. Who in their right minds would have thought that that would occur? And I think that's really important to remember. And that I think that Michael was very right in saying it's lessons learnt, and they've changed the system in response, because it's really important that when those things are identified, that something does go and fix it. And I believe that that's happening. And, you know,
so we should get our $12 million back then, shouldn't we?
Maybe they could go to retender. There's a whole range of things that could happen here, Matt. But I think that the question
people
should ask...
Do you think they should go to retender?
Well, you know what? If I was Brett Dixon right now, I'd retender.
I'm happy and very comfortable to say that on the record. Blue as well.
Well, I'm happy to say that on the record, I'd go to an open and transparent tender if I was them, if I was in their boat, because I think this doesn't look good for the Turf Club. And I think the Turf Club, who we all admit, do a great job with racing here in the top end.
No doubt about that.
And this sort of, what's come out through all of this and the processes that obviously there was an audit into those processes and they were found to be fine. The question is now around the Turf Club.
But from what you just said, you obviously don't believe it was an open and transparent tender.
No, I actually believe it probably was, but I don't think people recognise.
Do you think to prove that we need to know who was on that panel and how they voted?
No, I think people should recognise what is a conflict of interest. And in this case, rule 101 of being a director is that you have to recognise what a conflict of interest looks like. I think in this case it hasn't been recognised. I think people realise now in retrospect it doesn't pass the bub test. You guys have shone a light on it.
Yep.
That's great. What has to happen now is the Turf Club needs to make some hard decisions. If they go to retender, I think that would be a very good process for them. I can't speak for them. I'm not on their board. But the fact that we've responded and recognised that there was an issue in this space, I think that people have to recognise we're doing the right thing. I would never, ever accept that, I think that it's really, really important. I've done the director training myself. Conflict of interest is so subjective, it's so difficult and to manage. It's not an easy, it's very complicated. So
I reckon you make a very good point, Kate.
They need to look at that and make those decisions. I can't speak for Brett Dixon, but they do a damn good job here in the Territory. Every side of politics supports the racing industry in the Northern Territory, and this is for them to do that work.
I don't think that's in question.
No, but aren't we going to talk about Luxor now, though, Matt?
Your point about conflict of interest is a good one, though, because you look at how courts deal with conflict of interest, right? And it's real conflict of interest and perceived conflict of interest. They call it apprehended bias. Brian Martin stood down as the Royal Commissioner here in the Northern Territory, not because he had an actual conflict of interest,
but because
he had a perceived conflict of interest.
So this is the depth of conversation we should all be having around this, because they are judgments that people make every day. And if I was in the Turf Club, that is what I would do. But I am not in the Turf Club. I'm in a government that gave them... part of a government that has given them $12 million to do a job-creating project. They're all really important things, but these are questions for the Turf Club now.
Do you think the Chief Minister should pick up the phone to the Turf Club and suggest that they do
Matt,
that?
Matt, do you think that those some conversations have not occurred with the Turf Club? I mean,
From what the Chief Minister said yesterday, I would suggest that they haven't happened, because I asked him straight out in press conference yesterday.
He said,
I don't know who was on the selection panel. If I was him, that's the first thing I want to know.
You asked me a question, what I would do, and with my training as a director, a qualified director, then that is probably what I would do. I can't speak for the Turf Club. And that's, they need to speak for themselves. It's really important stuff.
We are going to have to get ready to wrap things up. It is just a couple of minutes away from 10 o'clock. Just very quickly, Luxor, where do you like yours from, Matt?
I actually like the pulled pork Luxor at the Deck Bar.
Oh, I've never tried that.
I've heard it's great.
That's good.
As a vegetarian, I've heard it's really good.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at you. But I wasn't laughing at you being a vegetarian, but it's thinking that it sounds good still, even as a vegetarian,
Can
really.
Can you put the pork in and then take it out? Does that still count?
It still counts. It counts. I have no...
vegans will be coming after you.
No, not the vegans. I'm not a vegan. Don't throw me in that bucket.
I've got two places. Cody, you've got the best market Luxor is at Coolalinga, and the best Luxor that you can buy in the rural area, of course, is at Johnny's at Berry Springs Shopping Centre.
Oh, I'm going to have to
Johnny.
But he's having a bet both ways. That's not fair. You have to pick one.
There's a different
there can only be one
ways.
What
about you, Coolalinga ones are on a Saturday morning. They open at 8 tomorrow till 1, and Johnny's is
and
open till 2 o'clock every day, and then he opens, I think, at 4 till about 8, and he's down at Livingston Reserve on a Friday night.
What about you, Kate?
Well, I would every day of the week go for a vegetarian Luxor from the Rendezvous with extra tofu. It's amazing.
I love Luxor. I'm hungry already.
And I have
there
to say,
there is Rhonda's tofu, of course, that is really my favourite. Rhonda's tofu.
Rhonda's tofu. I'll have to have
a word with
Rhonda.
We're going to have to wrap up. It is always wonderful to have you guys in for the week that was. Matt Cunningham from Sky News, Gary Higgins, Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you,
Katie. And Kate Warden, of course,
Thank
Member
you,
for
Katie.
Sanderson. Thanks all. Thank you all so much for joining us this morning. You are, of course, listening to The Week That Was this morning on 360.